in today's world, many people try to grow and grow and grow. They think growth is always important. Once you reach to one level, then you need to grow further. But for me, once you're comfortable, then maybe you move to the next phase of helping others to grow or working on your other areas of life and so on. Yeah. So just limit the growth and then be satisfied with your own lot is Taru o Shiru. And in fact, if everybody practices Taru o Shiru, and then the world become more sustainable, because we can sustain the kind of a wealth of comfortable level for each individual. But we cannot sustain the planet if a few people want to gain so much wealth. That's impossible.
This is Nick Kemp with the Ikigai Podcast, Japanese wisdom for a fulfilling and meaningful life. Find your Ikigai at ikigaitribe.com. This is episode 58 of the Ikigai Podcast, and I am back with author and sustainable life coach, Sachiaki Takamiya. And this is part two of a double episode we're doing on Ikigai biohacking. And I recommend you listen to the previous episode on what we discussed, which was diet, intermittent fasting, exercise, and a number of other things. In this episode, we will explore Sachiaki's book again, Ikigai Biohacking, Biohacking Based on Natural Japanese Health. And we'll look into things such as mental exercises, digital fasting, biohacking with nature, and bioharmonizing with your soul. Sachiaki, I'm excited to continue our conversation, so thanks for your time today.
No, not at all. Yeah, thank you for having me in your podcast again.
It's my pleasure. So let's dive in and start with the mind. You write that, yeah, how you think every day affects your well-being. And if you want to try and harmonize yourself, you need to tune into your mind. And so we struggle often just with daily life. We have these regular frustrations, negative experiences. So what is your advice?
Yeah, so we have a kind of thing called Shin On Kansha in Japanese. That is a way to pray at a Shinto shrine. But usually when people go to Shinto shrine, we kind of ask God for some favors, such as, you know, please protect our family's health, or please give us some fortune, you know, next year and so on. Usually we go to a shrine to maybe, you know, ask to give some happiness to us. But Shin On Kansha means you appreciate the favors that God have given to you already. So instead of asking, we are just thanking. Yeah, thank you very much for providing health to us last year. Or thank you very much for, you know, giving us these business opportunities, or, you know, something positive happened in your life, you basically appreciate. So that is the Shin On Kansha, a prayer that we do at our shrines. This is not so known. I mean, some people know, but most people don't know. Yeah. But real spiritual people practice Shin On Kansha prayer. Yeah.
I mean, I'm familiar with the word kansha, which I guess would translate to gratitude. So
right.
I guess you'd call it gratitude praying or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So Shin is kami, which is God, and then on is favors.
Divine praying, I think, or divine gratitude, yeah, I think is one way to translate it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, and so from your book and related to this idea of, is it Shin On or Shi?
Shin On Kansha.
Yeah, so Shin meaning kami, yeah, meaning God or spirit. So related to this are two expressions I learned in your book, which is Yoshuku and Ima Iwai. So what do these expressions mean and how are they helpful?
Right. Yeah. So first of all, with a shin-on kansha, because you pay attention to the bright side of your life. So not everybody, you know, have a, you know, bright experiences happening. I mean, some people have a kind of negative experiences too, but we always have something positive, even though general life is not so happy. Yeah. Cause I have never seen anyone who has kind of a negative kind of situation in all aspects of their life. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe for some aspects of their life, they are not really happy, but they do have some other aspect that they are quite comfortable. And on the other hand, I've never met a person who is absolutely happy in all areas. Like someone who is very, maybe is financially successful, may have a problem with their relationships or may have a problem with their health or something. So we are kind of a mixture of, you know, negative and positive experiences. So instead of paying attention to negative side, we pay attention to the bright side, then that can make our daily kind of thought happier, and which affect our health, because often the gut and brain are connected. It is considered that the gut and brain are connected. So how we think can influence our physical condition. So think positive, then you can become healthier. Yeah, that's the basic idea of practicing Shin-on Kansha meditation. Yeah. And for Yoshoku, Yoshoku is the Japanese version of a law of manifestation or a law of attraction. Have you come across this concept called the law of attraction?
Yeah, I think it was quite a thing a few years ago, maybe more than 10, 15 years ago with the book, The Secret.
Secret, yeah, yeah. So the law of attraction is if you think positive about your future and visualize your outcome, then you can attract that reality in your life. That's the basic idea. So they do a lot of visualization practice to manifest what you want in your life. Yeah. Yoshoku is instead of just visualizing, you celebrate it. You celebrate your future success. So as if you have already achieved your outcome and you celebrate it, and that will kind of materialize that reality. Yeah. So for example, Masayoshi Son, who is the CEO of SoftBank, he and his team usually practice Yoshoku. So when they launch a new project or new product, yeah, so the team get together and they just have a party, thinking in like 2 years' time, they have sold their product. Their product is like a bestseller. And they're having this party like, oh, you know, great, great. Our product is so successful. Yeah. And then they're kind of shaking hands and drinking beer. And that, yeah, is Yoshoku. And other example is like we have Hanami, like a cherry blossom viewing event. And then that is to celebrate the harvest in autumn. So we do Hanami in the spring, but we are imagining the autumn harvest, the rice harvest, because cherry blossom kind of reminds us of rice harvest. The blossom is a kind of a symbol of harvest. So by watching the cherry blossom, we celebrate the autumn harvest. So celebrating our success in advance is what Yoshoku is all about.
That's quite an interesting practice. I think it's taking the law of attraction or that visualization one step further where you sort of physically celebrate it.
Right, yeah. So it's on, not only visual, but your whole body is involved in the process. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty radical, actually. So
yeah. And imaiwa is something I kind of created based on Yoshoku. So this time, instead of celebrating your future outcome, you just celebrate your present outcome or present happiness, present success. Yeah. So it is just like a Shin-on Kansha in that sense. So you appreciate something positive happening in your life right now. And this time, not just simply appreciating, but celebrating it. So you maybe have a party or you have a drink to think about all the positive things happening in your life and then just enjoy the moment. So by making it a kind of ritual, and then it becomes more powerful than just thinking about it.
Yeah. You've coined this expression, ima iwai, yes?
Yes, I did.
So Japanese don't say this, but I do like this. And you touch on the idea that right now could be the happiest moment in our life. We just don't know.
Right.
And I've had a discussion on that before with Dr. Yasuhiro Kutera on that idea that he actually said he has triplets and another child. And, you know, those first few years of him looking after his triplets was extremely difficult. This was during the pandemics. And so his parents and his wife's parents couldn't come to visit them and help. And so he was basically saying, we just don't get any sleep. And every night, if one baby cries, the others wake up and cry. And usually he has to stand up and hold them. And, you know, when you're sleep deprived and stressed, it's probably not good for your health. But he had this approach where you never know. He might look back on that very fondly and think, you know what, that was actually the happiest moment in my life looking after my
children.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So I like this approach of celebrating the now, but also maybe thinking, you never know, this moment in your life right now could be the happiest moment. So you can kind of always be happy with this approach.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting. So I like this idea that we should celebrate, maybe not just be gratitude, but we can take it a step further and celebrate it, and that might make it more meaningful. So how do you practice ima iwai? So we should say ima means now, and iwai is from the verb iwau, to celebrate, yeah?
Right. Yeah.
So how do you practice ima iwai?
Yeah. So you can practice ima iwai anytime you want, really. But I think it is beneficial to make it a sort of habitual thing, like do it regularly, like once a month or so. Yeah. And the best timing is to do it on full moon, because often full moon is the time to kind of harvest, or the new moon is the time to make new wishes and so on. So I usually do yoshuku on the new moon night and then ima iwai on full moon night.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes because if you're working and stuff and you cannot always do the celebration on that day, but you can just find the nearest holiday, nearest weekend from the full moon or new moon, then you can do yoshuku and ima iwai.
Hey there, Nick Kemp here, and I wanted to touch base and let you know about my new course, the Find Your Ikigai course. Developed in consultation with Japan's leading Ikigai researchers, the Find Your Ikigai course is the only culturally accurate and evidence-based practical guide to the Ikigai concept. If you are interested in learning more about the Find Your Ikigai course, please visit ikigaitribe.com. Now back to the episode. And what do you do? Do you have a special dinner or?
Yeah. So just maybe cook something nice, something a little more like a feast type of dish. I mean, of course, it's healthy food, but with a sort of feast. And then some alcohol, if you like wine or beer, whatever you like to drink. And then really focus on the bright things happening in your life. Yeah. So in a way, to do it, you need to practice this Shin-on Kansha every day to get used to the idea of, so what are you happy about? Are you happy about your house? Are you happy about your family? Are you happy about your job or the place where you live, like the environment where you can go walking every day and so on? So pick, maybe list several things that you feel grateful for and then sublate it. Maybe you can even say, okay, let's drink to my family. I'm so happy about them and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this points to the importance of being aware. We have to be aware how fortunate we are and how lucky we are. I guess, to be born in countries where we have lots of freedom, lots of opportunity, great health care, an abundance of food, all our basic needs are met, but we have so much. And so we can definitely appreciate our past, what we have, and that for the most part we're satisfied in the moment, every right. hour, every minute of our day. And, yeah, you have this multi-sensory visualization process or method for your health. So that's, yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess if we take that approach, we're going to have a better sense of, a better feeling of well-being, and maybe we'll feel happier more often.
Right, yeah.
So I like that. So let's go a bit deeper and take things to a new level with another word I learned from your book, zangye. So what's zangye?
Yeah, so zangye simply means like apologizing or repenting. Yeah. So you basically apologize about your negative actions or negative thoughts and so on. So this is a practice done among Shugendo practitioners. I think we did talk about Shugendo in the last episode, right? This kind of a spiritual practice in the mountains. Yeah. So there are many practices that Shugendo practitioners do, but Zangye is considered to be the most important one. In fact, Yamabushis are the Shugendo practitioners. So when Yamabushi join the Shugendo, they have to kind of pass a test. And then first thing they have to do is Zangye. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Because if you have an ego, then you cannot really do many other spiritual practices. So they need to release your ego to join the Shugendo practice. By kind of repenting, then you can release your ego. Yeah.
Yeah, this reminds me of Nikan, which I think most of my audience would be familiar with, this method of self-reflection. And it has this three-question structure. I guess you can do it two ways. There's intense Nikan, where you'd go to a Nikan center and have a practitioner, and you basically spend most of your time in silence reflecting on these three questions and then offer answers to someone who's guiding you. But you can do it also as like a journaling exercise, and that, what have I received from others? What have I given? And then interestingly, this... what troubles or difficulties have I caused others?
Oh, yeah.
And that's very typical, I think, of Japanese culture, to understand, yeah, I may have caused trouble. I probably inconvenienced someone. Where in the West, we often are quite defensive and say, like, me? I haven't caused anyone trouble.
Yeah, I know of Nikan, but I have never done it before. So I didn't know about it in detail. So, oh, yeah, they have those three questions. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think it relates to that third question.
Yeah.
In particular, what troubles or difficulties have I caused? I think it's a great way to free yourself when you recognize, either you can recognize and think, you know, I could have handled that situation better. I was a bit rude, or, you know, I didn't do things properly, or I inconvenienced something. Even if you acknowledge it, I guess that frees you from it. And it gives you the opportunity maybe to either apologize to the person, or you can just think, you know, next time I'll do things better. So, yeah, I do think releasing the ego and then recognizing your faults frees you, because I think they'll always live with you somewhere in the back of your mind. You'll have this uneasiness or this sense of guilt. So I like this. The teenage version of myself would have struggled with this.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I think with a bit of life experience, we get a bit more mature and realize that the benefits of this kind of practice.
I know for some people it sounds not so attractive, because it's like a repentance, right? To apologize your action is not something we all want to do. Yeah, and then usually in the West, even among the New Age, you know, movement, and people tend to focus on the positive thing, and they like to do a positive thinking, but not so much kind of apologizing your, you know, negative deeds and so on. But I think I understand it very much too. But I think it's very important to first cleanse yourself in order to receive a positive energy. Just like your room too. If your room is very messy and then you kind of buy some beautiful flower vase or you buy a beautiful picture, still the room doesn't become beautiful. Mm. You first need to get rid of the garbage. You first need to tidy up your room and then you have your picture frame or flower vase, then the room becomes very beautiful. Yeah. But often we forget to do the first process and we just, you know, bringing the new picture frame and thinking that, yeah, we became positive or happy. Yeah. But the cleansing process is also important.
Yeah. In Japanese, really practice this. You I think school children understand the value of cleaning. And in Australia, we have school cleaners or janitors. And in Japan, I believe you don't have janitors or cleaners. The students do the cleaning. And there are all those wonderful stories how the Japanese spectators at, you know, the World Cup and other sporting events, they're always recognized. And there are newspaper articles about how the Japanese will clean up after themselves and often clean up the area of other spectators. And yeah, I think you do feel better. You feel free and you feel more comfortable in a clean environment. It does kind of clean your soul. So, yeah, as you said, you can't cover it up. You can't get a nice painting or a new table thinking it's going to look great if it's cluttered with junk. So it's an ongoing battle, though. I'm very conscious of it, but, yeah, it's almost a daily practice to maintain the cleanliness. This actually can lead us to almost a contradiction of this idea in the context of perfectionism versus flow. And what you talked about before, there's almost this toxic positivity in the West with self-help. And some people get really fixated on creating the perfect routine, or they might pride themselves on, you know, how long they've maintained a practice or a habit. And you might hear someone say, oh, look, I've been meditating for 3 years. I've never missed a day, or I haven't had a drink, or I haven't eaten any junk food for, you know, 2 or 3 years. But you recommend we should let ourselves go and kind of be reactive or be in flow with the natural flow of life. So do you want to touch on that?
Yeah. So first of all, about the perfection thing. So I talk about hara hachibunme, which basically means eating up to 80% full. So when you become 80% full, you stop eating. It's more like for a dietary kind of a guideline, but this can apply to other fields as well. So we don't need to seek the optimal result, like to reach 100%. But if you're 80% good, then it should be good. Then that gives you a mental space to play around a little bit. Yeah. But if you're always trying to make everything perfect, that itself becomes stressful, or you become kind of tense. But having this 20% space, yeah, gives you a relaxation and you're sort of relaxed and you can kind of go with the flow. Yeah, because for people who are trying to be perfect, usually have everything planned.
Yes.
Like you do everything according to your plan. So that means you have no space to be flexible or to change your plan. But I mean, sometimes doing things according to plan is important too. Yeah. But we also need to do things with the flow as well. Yeah. Because whatever happens in your life can be advantage. Yeah. To push you move to a certain directions. So for example, let's say like you have a plan to exercise, you can go to the gym and then your friend suddenly shows up. Yeah. But you would usually say, oh, sorry, I can't see you now because I need to go to the gym. This is my schedule now. But you never know what this friend can bring. Mm. Maybe by talking to him can give you some new insight, which will help your biohacking practice. Or maybe he will take you to a place where you meet another person who can help you with your career or something. And so life is full of surprises. Yeah. So we don't want to miss the spontaneity of our life.
Routine is very helpful and structure's great. But yeah, I agree. Having some flexibility to these often serendipitous opportunities or connecting with others, it's not a negative thing to break your routine, to do something else every once in a while. And I've kind of had this idea of that sometimes I think, oh, you know, I really should give up drinking. But if I did that, it'd probably be a healthy thing. But then it might mean when I go out with friends, I don't drink. And I definitely want to drink. And then that just might impact the flow of the evening or, you know, why aren't you drinking, Nick? And so, yeah, I think a bit of flexibility helps. And, yeah, perfectionism doesn't really exist anyway. So we can let go. And as you mentioned, it can get quite stressful when you're so fixated on doing things in a certain way. And somewhat related to this is how we listen and what we say, or sometimes letting go of the urge to say something. And I think this has probably been one of the most valuable lessons I've learned from living in Japan and spending time with Japanese people. And you talk about the art of listening. So I found this very powerful in Japan, the practice of holding back and listening instead of always speaking your mind. So it's kind of related. We could cut back on our desire to speak our mind. So would you like to touch on this idea of the art of listening and how it's very powerful?
Yeah. So in Japan, usually people who listen to others are respected more, yeah, than the people who talk a lot. Yeah. While in the West, probably, you know, self-expression is regarded to be very important. And if you talk a lot or if you express yourself, and that is considered to be valuable, because in a way, you need to kind of fight, or you need to demand your right to get your share. Otherwise, you will never have your voice heard. So you need to constantly kind of fight to get your word across, or in order to do that, you need to talk a lot. Yeah. But in Japan, we don't need to do that so much because people try to listen to you. So even though you don't say anything, people can feel your thought. Yeah. So therefore, we don't need to demand our rights so much in Japan. Yeah. So instead, if you listen to others, then we will know what others want. Maybe we can help them, and then they will help you, kind of thing. Yeah. So listening is considered to be very important. And I found not so much about just expressing your mind or holding back. I mean, you can say what you want to say too. Yeah. But I mean, just the time, because often if you are having a conversation, how much are you speaking and how much are you listening? Are you speaking 80% and listening only 20%? Or are you listening 80% and speaking only 20%? Ideally, maybe 50%, 50. So you speak, but also you listen. Yeah. So you don't want to only listen, because you do need to express yourself too. Yeah. So just having this 50%, 50% listening and speaking is a good ratio. And this mentality of constant, this urge to express yourself, yeah, is related to the competitive mindset. So, you know, we need to win the race. And in order to win, we need to do everything perfect and so on. But it is okay to lose, or it is okay not to win all the time. Yeah. Then it relaxes you, because you're not obsessed with winning.
Yeah, I like how you articulated this idea, and I'd like to quote you from your book. This cultural difference is like the way people exercise, whether to flex your muscles or loosen them. And I think we know it's probably far more beneficial to loosen your muscles. And
right.
And when you're when you're flexing your muscles, it suggests you're seeking, you know, dominance, and you want to, you know, want to impress people. So really love that quote. Yeah, we should try and get that quote out there. So beautiful. Yeah, so this idea of holding back on what you want to say has been very helpful. And it leads into another chapter of your book, which is digital fasting. And so we've talked about the importance of fasting, and we touched on intermittent fasting in the previous episode. So in this one, we can touch on digital fasting. And I think our audience will have some idea of what we're going to talk about. Yeah, so you dedicated a whole chapter in your book to digital fasting, and we do have this strong dependency on technology. We enjoy many benefits from it. So here we are, we're having a podcast interview. You're in Japan, I'm in Australia, and it's being recorded, and we can essentially do this for free. So that's just amazing when you think about maybe 20, 30 years ago, I'd have to fly over to Japan, would have to get a studio, it would cost us thousands of dollars. So I definitely appreciate the opportunities technology affords us. But there's this incredible imbalance now with how much we use it and, yeah, how much it takes away our time. And you touch on this, and you mentioned someone called Masanobu Fukuoka. So would you like to talk about him?
So Masanobu Fukuoka is a farmer. He's a natural farmer, and he invented a farming method called natural farming. And he has written a book called The One Straw Revolution, which became a bestseller. Yeah. And he says that the humans have created problems by adding something. So when we discover a problem, we try to think of a solution, and then we come up with a new method or new medicine or new machine or something to solve the problem. But he says that is actually creating more problems. Yeah. For example, like when our land was not fertile, we started using fertilizers. Yeah. But he says using fertilizers actually damage our soil more by letting the natural kingdom fertile the land is more effective, such as microorganisms or insects and, you know, things in the soil are constantly helping the soil to be rich. Yeah. But bringing the kind of artificial fertilizer destroy that natural cycle. So we think we have solved the problem, but actually we added a new problem. So because of that, now plants are more susceptible to diseases and so on, or insects and so on. Then we invented something called agricultural chemical to solve the problem. But again, this agricultural chemical created a new problem. You know, it's bad for the environment and so on. And so it keeps going that we are adding something, but then it end up creating more problems. So he says we need to go back to the nature. We need to go back to the beginning when everything was in perfect harmony. Yeah, if we could live naturally, then we can solve most problems in our life. That's what he says. Yeah. So the technological development is the same in a way, because we have developed the technology in order to make things more convenient, which I understand very much, because in the past, a lot of things are inconvenient. Yeah. Even in agriculture too. I mean, when we were doing planting rice by hand, it took a much longer time than using a rice planting machine. So rice planting machine was a good invention, and many people appreciate it as a convenient tool. So sometimes those are okay, but there comes to a limit where we don't need any more conveniences. Yeah. For example, now, when we had a PC, yeah, compared to before the PC time, I felt the convenience the PC brought was incredible. Like with email things, for example, because yeah. before we are sending letters and took 1 week to send to Australia and 1 week to receive the answer. But now with the email, you can do it in 1 day. Yeah. And that was convenience enough. But shift from PC to smartphone. So, I mean, I am quite happy receiving the response a day after. That's fast enough. I don't need to receive it 1 minute after. But now what people are doing is, you know, oh, with this method, you can receive the answer 1 minute later or maybe 10 seconds later. But do we need this kind of convenience? There's a point when everything is too much, and it, in fact, it is making our life inconvenient.
Yeah, detrimental.
Because if you receive a response in like 5 minutes, then, yeah, you don't have your time to do other things. You're constantly controlled by, you know, your email or, you know, Facebook messages and so on.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we both have strong opinions on technology, both positive and then perhaps this concern about at what point does it become detrimental. And I do think smartphones is a really good example. And for many people, it's the last thing they look at night. And then it's the first thing they reach for in the morning. So people are sleeping with their phones and they cannot be healthy. And this urge now to check email and social media. And then, of course, entertainment is something we can, you know, enjoy several hours of every day. And I remember back in the 80s, like, Sunday night was the night to watch TV, and they'd usually have a popular movie. And so you'd look forward to Sunday night, and then, you know, you go to school the next day, and I couldn't really watch a lot of TV during the week. But, yeah, if you're not careful now, you can find yourself watching hours of TV every day, and that's probably not the best use of your time. So we have, as you mentioned, this problem with smartphones, that the use of them is becoming probably more detrimental than beneficial.
Yeah, especially doing it before going to sleep is very bad. Yeah, yeah. You do need about at least 1 hour of a kind of analog period to optimize your sleep quality. Yeah, and also touching your smartphone first thing in the morning is not healthy either. Yeah, you need to have at least 1 hour of kind of analog period to set yourself with the circadian rhythm and everything.
Yeah, you have a son who's quite young. He's about 10 or?
He's 11 now.
11 now. So what are your concerns? Because I remember we didn't give my son a phone until he was in high school. And we thought this was good parenting and not having a phone during his first, you know, 6 years of school, elementary school, was a positive thing. And then once we gave him a phone, it really didn't make a difference. He's sort of become addicted to it, and now he's 19, so it's sort of his choice how to use it. And so I discovered, wow, this is really hard to manage as a parent. You can either just don't give your child a phone, because when we first gave my son a phone, we had all these rules, you know, don't use it after 8 p.m. And it became very difficult to manage, it became this great source of conflict. And it was sort of the only time he got upset in his life was he finally got the phone and he was starting high school and saying, what are you talking about? All my friends use it after 8 p.m. That's when we use it. So it was very challenging. And maybe things are a bit different. You know, my son's, we're near Melbourne, and so everyone in his school at the time had a phone, and it was common practice. In fact, it made his life difficult not to have a phone, because he wasn't in the social loop and he couldn't be updated on where his friends were meeting or going out. So how do you approach this with your own son?
Yeah, so he doesn't have a phone yet, and But he uses a PC, like my PC, to watch YouTube and things. Yeah. And it is actually difficult with his case because I want him to study English as well. And then, you know, computer is a great tool to study English or to expose yourself to English language. So he watches YouTube in English now.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, in fact, his favorite show is Sis Bertha's Bro. You know this one? It's a kind of a popular YouTube program for children. Yeah, yeah. But so it is helping his English. So I kind of allow him do that. So I need to think about the balance. And he started playing games too, which I wasn't intending, but he wanted to do it. So finally, I had to let him do it. And then with a game is affecting him negatively, I think. Yeah, because it's not in English. Yeah. But for just watching YouTube videos in English is still kind of okay for his English. Maybe not, you know, good for his health and so on. So, yeah, it is more difficult to deal with your children because children have different issues.
Yes.
Other than just health. But just for your life, then you can control. Yeah, yourself. You can just choose to use technology or not, depending on your outcomes, depending on what you want to achieve.
Well, this leads me to a question about Japan. And is Japan a country of contradiction? You know, the Japanese people love and recognize the importance of nature, but Japan's also, you know, a pioneer of gadgets and technology. And I guess in the last 40 years, many Japanese have left nature or the countryside to live in cities. And I mean, yeah, I remember going to Japan and just there were so many gadgets, and Japan seemed to be the pioneer of gadgets. So yeah, do you see Japan as a country of contradictions?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of contradictions in our culture. Yeah. So the technology is one. I mean, although Japanese culture is very much based on nature and natural living, if you kind of look at the traditional culture, like many things come from nature and the natural way of living and rhythm. But modern day Japan is a country of technology, and we have all kinds of gadget and so on, as you said. Yeah. And many people don't exercise so much. Japan is not a big sport country compared to, you know, other, like the United States. I think the United States is a very sport oriented country. So many people exercise, they go jogging and so on. In Japan, not many people do that. Although recently the fitness is becoming popular, but still we have a lot of sedentary people, and yeah, people spend their time using smartphone and yeah, indoor and so on. So yeah, it is a big contradiction, right?
So you have some recommendations for what you call digital intermittent fasting. So what are your recommendations?
Yeah, so my recommendation is try to fast from digital things 2 hours before going to bed and 2 hours after waking up, if you can. And if 2 hours is too much, then maybe 1 hour. 1 hour before going to bed and 1 hour after waking up. If that is difficult, maybe 30 minutes. Yeah. So the idea is to create some moment that you don't use technology before going to sleep and after waking up, because it helps your sleeping tremendously and it helps your autophagy, which we talked about in the last episode. Yeah. And because autophagy is activated during your sleep. So before going to bed, you want to prepare that activation. And after waking up, you want to kind of, settle the activation. But if you start using computer or smartphone right after you wake up, you kind of ruin the whole process that you did at night. Yeah. So prolong the time of using your gadget as long as possible in the morning.
Yeah, I think it's also about getting into that circadian rhythm, isn't it? And the best thing you can do is get up and have a drink of water and then go outside and walk.
Right. Yeah. You need to get the morning sunlight exposure. That is very helpful. Yeah. Andrew Huberman from the Huberman podcast. Yeah. He's a Huberman Lab. Yeah. Huberman Lab podcast. Yeah. He says that you want to get out to the sun within 1 hour of waking up. So if you get up at 7 o'clock, by 8 o'clock, you want to have a sunlight exposure, like maybe at least 10 minutes or so. Yeah, it kind of sets you with a circadian rhythm. So I usually go Nordic walking or jogging in the morning. So I kind of spend nearly, 40 to 50 minutes under the sun, which is a very good way of starting the morning. Yeah. So if you have a morning routine like that, then automatically you don't have time to use the technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one way is to make some morning routine where you can do things analog. And the same with the evening routine. You can create an evening routine. In my case, I have a bath because in Japan, we have a custom to have a bath. And then maybe 1 hour before going to bed, you can have a bath. And after a bath, you can kind of meditate or you can do some kind of relaxing activities and then preparing for your sleep.
Yeah, this is interesting because another problem, and this goes back to this problem of adding, is a lot of people when they exercise, they do take their phone or they have an Apple Watch and, they're fixated on how many steps they've done and they have to reach 10,000 steps. And that kind of adds that layer of stress again. So I think even if you don't exercise, if you just decide to walk 10 minutes, 20 minutes outside every morning and you free yourself from the artificial world or at least your devices, it really has this positive impact. And I kind of wake up and the first kind of craving is not food. It's this craving to get outside and it's just walking and it's just walking for 10, 20 minutes. And then I have my coffee and I really enjoy that. And then I look at my phone and then I start my computer. Now, another thing, and I love this, that you put in your book, it's sort of a sub-chapter, it's candlelight, acoustic music, and board games. So,
right.
You want to touch on that briefly? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So at night, it is better to avoid electric light as much as possible, which is nearly impossible, I know. So, I mean, if you cannot do it, then you don't need to worry too much about it. But then some nights, maybe you can use candlelight instead of electric light. Just maybe one day a week or maybe on the weekend or something. Just spend some night with candlelight and then don't, listen to music from, CD or computer, but maybe play a musical instrument. So create a kind of analog moment. Yeah, is critical. Well, you can maybe make a fire outside in your yard and have a barbecue, but this natural fire is very helpful for your eye and everything. Yeah.
Like it. And you also recommend having a digital free hangout day. So what's that?
Yeah, digital free hangout day. Yeah. So because it is often to do with our relationship with friends, because they send a text message, you feel you need to reply the message. So you have to have an agreement with your friends too. So they make you say, okay, let's make a digital free day. Yeah. For example, on Saturday, like every Saturday, you make it digital free. So that means you and your friends agree to don't send text messages on that day. Yeah. Because it helps them too. Yeah. Or if you're meeting your friend, you can say, okay, let's say tonight, no smartphone. We just focus on our conversation. We look at each other's faces and talk to each other. We don't need to take pictures of us having conversation and then uploading on your Instagram or Facebook page. Yeah. We just want to have fun here. Yeah. With these members. And maybe you can talk to your digital friends later. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need to make that kind of distinction sometimes, because otherwise, we just don't have our life. Yeah. We're always connected
yeah.
with the social media.
It's not very healthy. So let's move on now. I guess then we're kind of looking at that idea in a much bigger picture now to bioharmonize with Gaia or Mother Nature. And as we've noted,
right,
or as you note, generally when we think of biohacking, it's done in an artificial environment. So people use the latest technology and gadgets to measure their bodies. They're getting supplements from tablets instead of, you know, real food. And they're exercising with machines inside instead of exercising outside. So this whole biohacking is done in this artificial environment. But you write that Ikigai biohacking is linked to planetary well-being. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So one thing, as we touched on the last episode, everything we do is natural. Yeah, that's what we call it, Shizenha biohacking too, the naturalist biohacking. So we try to do things outdoor. We try to, you know, do some stretching type of exercises or oriental exercises and so on. But also we do things which is environmentally friendly. Yeah. For example, when eat food, we try to choose organic food or local food. Yeah, because organic food is good for our health, but it's good for the environment. Because sometimes the researchers kind of disagree on the health benefit of organic food. Yeah, whether organic food is actually more beneficial than non-organic food, some scientists kind of argue. But for me, regardless of the result, yeah, even though the organic food, you know, weren't healthier than regular food, still it is better for the environment. Therefore, it's worth consuming organic food for that purpose too. So everything done in the Ikigai biohacking is good for the environment. We try to find a way that helps both our personal health and the planetary health. Yeah. And the thing about supplement, I mean, I'm not against supplement. Supplement can be beneficial sometimes, and there are people who need supplement to cover their nutritional deficiencies. But that should be our last resort. Yeah, first we can maybe look for some other natural means because we can get enough nutrition from food. And also, sustainability of supplement is not really clear because you probably find the ingredient from far place. It's not a local ingredient, and also it's kind of manufactured. So to make supplement, they may be using a big scale monocultural farming method. But it is important to promote polycultural farming, where you kind of grow many different plants in the same land, and in small scale farming too.
Yeah, you touch on changing dietary and medical culture. And I mean, I think if we stop and think about it, we are so influenced by big food, big companies, all these companies, this conglomerate of companies that's, yeah, telling us to eat unhealthy food. And they're usually in cahoots or in partnership with big pharma who are saying, take this medicine, not to get better, just to treat the symptoms. So, yeah, we've got companies advertising to us, hoping we'll get sick, and then we stay sick or unwell so they can sell us medicine. And I don't want to go too hard on this, but you talk about most companies have a profit-driven culture and they're, you know, they seem to not consider the environment or the planet. And you talk about the only thing we can really do or begin to do to start changes to begin with ourselves and our choices. You touched on Hara Hachibunme, this idea of eating 80% full, and that's become quite popular, this expression, you know, eat until you're 80% full. But you mentioned another expression, taru o shiru. So what's taru o shiru?
Yeah, taru o shiru means satisfied with your own lot. Yeah. So once you are comfortable with your growth, don't seek further growth. So in a way, kind of similar. So once you reach 80% and you kind of stop there, you don't need to reach 100%. But in today's world, many people try to grow and grow and grow. They think growth is always important. Once you reach to one level, then you need to grow further. But for me, once you're comfortable, then maybe you move to the next phase of helping others to grow or working on your other areas of life and so on. Yeah. So just limit the growth and then be satisfied with your own lot is Taru o Shiru. And in fact, if everybody practices Taru o Shiru, and then the world become more sustainable, because we can sustain the kind of a wealth of comfortable level for each individual. But we cannot sustain the planet if a few people want to gain so much wealth. That's impossible.
So you talk about that, do away with a competitive mindset and maybe think about the businesses you want to support, preferably, you know, small businesses and maybe local small businesses.
Right.
And you introduce this traditional business concept by the omni-merchants of Japan, and it's called Sampoyoshi. So would you like to touch on that?
Yeah. So Sampoyoshi means three-way satisfaction and then consists of three yoshi. Yoshi means good or happy. Urite yoshi, that means the seller is happy. And then kaite yoshi, that means buyer is happy. And then second yoshi, that society is happy. Yeah. So Omi merchants were the merchants from Shiga Prefecture, existed, I think, 18th century or 17th century. And then they had this philosophy to practice their business. Yeah. So it is okay to make yourself happy. So in this case, seller is like you. So you can become happy, but also buyer, maybe others, like maybe people who relate to directly, they can be happy. And then society in general can be happy too. So if we aim to make three parties happy, then we can create more sustainable world. So I don't want people to only sacrifice yourself for the world or for the environment, because sometimes environmental movement tend to become like that. So in order to help the world, you need to give up many things. But you can make yourself happy as long as this is Taru o Shiru level, meaning, you know, comfortable, but not too much. Yeah, this balance is very important. Yeah. But then you think of an action or a lifestyle that can also make others happy, the people you relate to, such as your family members, your friends, your coworkers. Yeah. Because some, again, environmental action demands you to sacrifice yourself, but also your family too. I know some environmental activists whose family have hard time because, you know, they're always busy, you know, marching or something and don't have time to spend with their children and so on. Yeah. So finding the balance is very important. So there are a lot of methods where you can feel happy about doing it and then you can make your close friends happy and the society happy too.
Yeah, I like this idea. And I remember when we first spoke to each other a number of years ago, I think I read this in another one of your books, and this idea that it's not just a two-way street where the seller and the buyer is happy, including society, and that is something to keep in mind. And, yeah, you believe we need to shift from this growth-oriented global urite yoshi, so where the seller's happy, to a small-scale sampoyoshi business model where the seller, buyer, and society are all kind of balanced and in line and everyone's happy or satisfied and it's sustainable. This actually reminds me of Ken Moggi's pillar of, he has five pillars of Ikigai, but he has that pillar of harmony and sustainability. And he's not just talking about the environment. He's talking about sustainability in your relationships, and you should seek to maintain and ensure that they keep going and last as long as possible. So we've gone for an hour, Satyaki, and I thought we'd get through all our questions, but we've actually got quite a lot to go. So I'm thinking this is a really good spot to maybe finish, and we could always do another episode.
Right.
Because I think this is a really good point that, yeah, in this competitive global world we live in, we should think small scale. And going back to this expression, taru or shiru, so shiru is the verb to know or understand. So taru means limit or level or?
Taru is having enough. Yeah.
Adequacy. Have you heard the word called adequacy?
Yeah, adequate. Adequacy. Mm.
Taru is the opposite of shortage. So knowing that you have enough. Yeah.
Okay. So I think at the moment, for this episode, we've reached taru or shiru.
Right.
So let's maybe explore the rest of your book in another episode. And I highly recommend people purchase your book. And, you know, actually, I don't want to give away all the wisdom in your book. So other than buying your book, which is available on Amazon, how can people reach out to you?
Yeah. So I have two kind of a media type of thing. One is my blog post, which goes the ikigaidiet.com, where I upload my post 3 times a week. So you can visit my website and there's a contact section and you can contact me through the site. And also I have a YouTube channel called Ikigai Diet channel. And I upload a new video once a week. Yeah. And then in the YouTube channel, have a links to my website too. So through the website, you can contact me. Yeah. But to know about what I'm doing, the best thing to do things are watching my YouTube video and reading my blog post.
And purchasing your book, which is Ikigai Biohacking, Biohacking Based on Natural Japanese Health. So a pleasure to have you back on, Satyaki. So I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really enjoyed today's talk. Thank you.
My pleasure, mate. Thank you too.
This episode was brought to you by the Find Your Ikigai course. Developed in consultation with Japan's leading Ikigai researchers, the Find Your Ikigai course is the only culturally accurate and evidence-based practical guide to the Ikigai concept. To learn more about the Find Your Ikigai course, please visit ikigaitribe.com.